We're talking burnout this week and today how overworking is killing you. And Americans think they need this number to retire. And then the Surgeon General releases a framework on workplace health. I'll break it down. Let's go. Helping you win at work and in life, this is the Ken Coleman Show. My aim is singular, and I am maniacally focused on this aim, that is to help you make more money and experience more meaning in your work. And this week, if you are new to the show, each day this week, our five shows will focus on the scourge, the epidemic of burnout. This is a thing, really is. And I have developed, with great research and great care, five singular causes of burnout. Yesterday, we talked about having just no passion, no juice, no love of the work. It's just, there's no excitement. It's just not something you want to do. And that's okay to acknowledge that. And I shared some of my personal story. Today, we're going to talk about overwork. Overwork, 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 overwork. It's why quiet quitting took off as a phenomenon on social media, right? People were like, oh, that feels good. Feels real nice compared to overworking. Well, let's look at some of the health data. Working 55 plus hours per week is associated with a 35% higher risk of stroke and a 17% higher risk of dying from heart disease compared to 35 to 40 hours a week. So, I mean, you know, there are seasons where you have to do something like that, but a prolonged season of overworking and just those 15 extra hours a week above and beyond the 40 hours, 35% higher risk of stroke, 17% higher risk of heart disease. Those numbers from the World Health Organization. It's also bad for our relationships and ultimately the output that we're stressed out over, that we're working longer hours for, which is excellent work. Do you know that if you are regularly losing sleep, so you're working really late, or you're very stressed due to all of the working hours, and you're having a hard time going to sleep, that impacts your memory, your emotional intelligence, and problem-solving ability? You think, well, if we're all that way, it affects all of us. No, this is real, real impact. Listen to this. After 24 hours of no sleep, your mental performance is equivalent to that of someone who has a blood alcohol content of 0.10%. The legal limit is 0.08. Now, at 6 hours of sleep, and you can go do this research on your own, but there's a research out there that that creates an equivalent of how many beers you're drinking. After, if not getting if you get 6 hours of sleep, it's like the equivalent of drinking, I want to say a 12 pack or something like that. So you may not be hammered, but you ain't sharp. So if you are in this bucket and you're hearing me talk about being overworked, and this, by the way, doesn't necessarily mean excess hours, because I believe there are people that are working 40 hours a week that are overworked. And here's what I mean. They're responsible for more. They're having to do more than they had normally been doing. We saw this a lot. We still see this as a result of people leaving during the pandemic. And so your coworker leaves and the company can't replace them as a result of either the money or they just can't find somebody to take the job. So guess what? You're catching the falling plates. And so you may not be working extra hours, but your intensity and the stress and the pressure during the 40 hours, to me, is equal to the long hours. It's not so much the amount of time, it is the pressure, the responsibility, the stress that comes from that. So I want us to look at both sides of it. Too much being asked of you in your 40 hours, or too much being asked of you as it relates to total hours. Either one, that's what we're looking at. So the solution to being overworked is, first, you've got to assess, is this self-imposed? Meaning, am I the reason that I'm overworking? And some of you might be going, well, Ken, how is that even possible? I think it's very possible. I was just talking to a friend the other night, and he was telling me, man, when I'm on vacation, I never turn off. I've got to work all the time. And the nature of what he does, he has a much more of an on-demand type of work than I do. And so I certainly understand that. But as we began to talk some more, and I just listened, he just kept talking. He kind of talked himself into, all I simply said was, do you do a good job of turning things off? And I didn't say anything more than that. And he just kept talking and talking and talking. And finally, he was like, well, you know what? I could set boundaries. There are the occasional fires that it isn't all hands on deck. But honestly, I just like helping people. And I feel like if somebody needs my help and I'm on vacation and I can't help them, I'm going to help them. And I just looked at him and smiled. And I said, so you're choosing this? And he goes, yeah. Unfortunately, I need to self-assess. I need to reassess how I put boundaries up on my vacation. Now, this is just me talking to another dad. Okay, one of my, he's the father to one of my son's buddies. And so understand that this self-imposed thing is bigger than we want to let on. Like, so are you feeling like you are failing, or you may get docked in the office, or somebody's going to talk bad about you if you don't respond to vacation? This is self-imposed. There's insecurity at the root of all of this. Insecurity is leading to self-imposed overworking. You can't put up boundaries because you're afraid of what the boundaries are going to do. The second is this a leadership imposed deal? Meaning your boss, your manager, your leader has created an environment where everybody is having to do too much, or is specifically mandating for a season. And we're going to get to a story on that a little bit later in the program. So is it self-imposed, or is it leader-imposed or work-imposed? Those are the two questions. And when we get to this, we got to just be really gut-level honest. Could it be 50-50? Yes. 60-40, 70-30? Sure. Could it be 100% all leader, all work-imposed? They're just overworking you. All right. Now, once we get to the source of the overworking, we have to say, all right, am I willing to keep putting up with this? Is it a conversation that needs to be had? Is the conversation ignored, or is it acted upon? If it's ignored, I know this. It's time for me to start looking. If it's acted upon, all right, I'm going to be patient. I'll work with my leader, see if we can fix the situation. I recently saw a viral tweet of a Twitter executive sleeping on her office floor. Ken Kosienda, a former Apple engineer who helped build the first iPhone, replied to the tweet and said, I helped to create two different billion user projects at Apple. And I was on these teams from the earliest stages, and I never once came close to sleeping at the office. It's not an essential part of doing great work. And I started slow clapping. Bottom line is, when you're exhausted physically, mentally, and emotionally, you're not going to do good work. So make some changes. It's up to you. It's your life. Coming up, how much money do you think you need to retire? We'll talk about it. All right. How much money do you think you need to retire and retire well? Let's set the context for that question as retire well. Okay, so let me define that. That doesn't mean you're just sitting around in your house watching The Price is Right and living on a minimal subsistence. I'm talking about like you're able to travel, you're able to see your family, you're able to live a life, you know, you're not a shut-in. Well, this is interesting. New data from CBS's MarketWatch website right here in my hands. The number is, a new survey from Northwestern Mutual released this week found that U.S. adults anticipate they will need $1.25 million to retire comfortably. Now, that amount is 20% higher than it was in a similar survey in 2021. So obviously, you know, inflation is infecting the whole economy, and people are starting to go, well, I need a little bit more. The shift in this number comes as Americans' average retirement savings has dropped 11% to $86,869, down from $98,800 last year. Now, that's the average American's retirement nest egg. So when you look at that, a lot of people see $1.25 million as maybe a mountain they can't scale. It's not true. Now, obviously, I am a part of Ramsey Solutions, and if you don't know that I'm a part of Ramsey Solutions, Dave Ramsey, financial expert, best-selling author, and what we teach here is there's not a set number. The number is different for everybody. The way you want to live your life may be different than the way I want to live my life. The way you live your life now may be very different than how I live my life now. So there is no number. So the $1.25 million in a survey, don't get locked in on that. I don't want anybody new to the show to go, oh, well, that's a number. Ken thinks that's a credible number. The bottom line is I don't know if that's the right number for you or not. Okay. However, a lot of experts would agree with what Dave Ramsey's advice has been for decades. We preach that you need to be investing 15% of your income after you are out of debt. And after you have 3 to 6 months savings in the bank, you're saving 15% of your income. And to the extent that you can juice that and put more in, that's fine. All right. But the reality is you have to sit there and look at your lifestyle now and where you want your lifestyle to be when you retire. And I like to push people on this very idea. I don't know if I've said it on the show or if this is something I've said in our production meetings with the team, but I'm actually anti-retirement. Some people are freaking out right now. Oh, Dave Ramsey's guy says he's anti-retirement. Here's my point. I'm not anti-retirement funds. I'm not anti-retirement savings. I'm just anti the notion of stopping work altogether. Now, please don't get your feelings hurt. If you want to retire and never work another day in your life and you got the money to do it and you're a full-time traveler, fan-freaking-tastic. I'd probably look at your pictures on Instagram. I'm just telling you for me and what I believe about the human condition is this idea of never contributing to the world outside of ourselves and our family, if that's retirement, I'm anti-retirement. I'm not anti-slowing down. But I think we as humans need to be doing something. We need to be contributing. So if that means you're retired from a normal job with a paycheck and you are volunteering, fine. I'll call that you're not retired either. But if it's, you know, but this idea of I never do anything else other than just travel and sit around and watch TV and putz around the house, I'm just going to tell you something. I don't think that's a recipe for happiness. And I understand not everybody is physically able to do that. I'm excluding health issues where you have to be in a nursing home, all that. I'm excluding that. I'm saying healthy bodied person, I don't care if you're 90. Let me tell you something. Right now, I tell all my friends and family. In fact, I'm making the announcement. If I'm healthy at 90, I'm working somehow, some way. If nobody wants to hear from me anymore on any kind of public thing, I'm going to some public place and I'm going to be a greeter. And I'm going to say hi to people. Or maybe I'll be one of those crosswalk guards. As long as I can still stand in the middle of the road and see traffic coming both ways. I'm just telling you, when I'm an old dude, I'm going to slow down. And I promise you this, I'm going to play golf probably every day. I'm going to have some hang time with my buddies, right? I want it to be a combination thing, right? Like I got the 7 a.m. tee time. And then after we play, I hold court at the club and there's cigars and bourbon solving world's problems and slapping guys on the back. How's your family? All that, right? But I tell you this, in the back half of the day, I need to be doing something. I need to be involved with people, coaching people, mentoring people, loving on some young people. I got to be contributing and doing something that is outside myself. Now, that's just me. So I think that retirement, number one, is overrated. And I don't think it's healthy for us to truly retire as in quitting work. And I've been on the record about this with this financially independent retire early movement. A bunch of these young people, they're all misguided. God bless them. It's called the FIRE movement. It's nonsensical. I'm going to work like a dog for 20 years, completely burn out, like we talked about today. But when I get to 40, I'm going to check out and I'm going to do it wrong. Let me tell you something. That'll last for about a year or two. And then you're going to wake up one day going, what do I do? Everybody's talking about the royal family and the crown and all this. The show has gotten some popularity, I guess, since Queen Elizabeth died. Can I tell you something? Do you know why a lot of the royal family is a complete train wreck and a mess? This isn't going to be popular, but somebody has to say it. You know why they get into, I'm not saying all of them, but you know why a lot of royal families, go look it up, why they're a complete mess, these monarchs? They got nothing to do. What are they doing? I mean, how many charity events can you go to and stand there and wave and greet people and take a picture? So, there you go. All right, next topic. Boy, it's sufficiently offended some people. But, you know, honestly, it's the truth. I would go crazy if I was in the royal family, Alex. And my schedule was, well, you're going to go over here and shake some hands and wave at people. Then you're going to go over here and shake some hands and wave at people. And then you're going to go walk in the garden and decide how much money you want to spend to the taxpayer. Thank you, Joe. He really wanted to contribute that. There's no soul level value being created. I mean, being nice to people and showing up at charity events is lovely. But I mean, what are you doing to contribute? And let me tell you something, that's the life you live. I think you're in a prison of luxury, a prison of privilege, and I think it drives them batty. All right. See, I left that alone and I circled back to kick that horse one more time. That's all to say that meaning and work and contribution are vital to the soul, to the spirit of a human. All right. Next thing I want to cover here. The U.S. Surgeon General released a new framework for mental health and well-being in the workplace, and I thought this is fascinating. I'm going to break this down. Obviously, you know the data. If you've been watching and listening to me for some time, the average worker will spend 90,000 plus hours of their life at work, and that is, if you want to just get out of the sheer number, that's about half of their waking life at work. And so the Surgeon General now has come out with five essentials for workplace mental health and well-being. So I thought, well, let me just review the good doctor's list. As somebody who is actually an expert on workplace well-being, because I talk to people by the thousands who aren't experiencing well-being and wellness at work. First is protection from harm. This is what he's saying companies need to do. Prioritize workplace physical and psychological safety. Okay, I'll get that. Enable adequate rest. You have no control over that, companies. Next, connection and community is the second thing. Foster positive social interaction and relationships in the workplace. I agree with that. But he goes right to create cultures of inclusion and belonging. If inclusion is everybody feels like they're a part of a team serving a greater cause, great. Work-life harmony, third. Mattering at work, four. That's all I talk about. And finally, opportunities for growth. I'd like to meet with the Surgeon General in D.C. and fix that list a little bit. There's more to add to that. Don't move. More of the Ken Coleman Show right around the corner. It's all about breakthrough here, folks. Helping you get unstuck and then becoming unstoppable. This is the Ken Coleman Show. And by the way, for our podcast listeners, we're on SiriusXM, Talk Radio, YouTube, and podcasts, wherever you listen to your favorite podcast. For our podcast listeners, hey, I don't ask you enough. And so I told the team, make me ask. So they reminded me. If you enjoy the program, would you give us a 5-star review? And would you share it with somebody? One click of a link and share it. That is word of mouth, and that'll help us grow. Thank you very much. All right, let's go to Atlanta, Georgia, where Kay joins us. Kay, you're on the Ken Coleman Show.
Ken, it's an honor to talk to you.
Well, the honor's all mine. What's up?
So I recently accepted a job for higher pay, but I work for my father. it's causing a lot of resentment that's building up, that's not being talked about. Ooh. It's affecting me on a mental, emotional level.
Yeah, it is.
I am a very emotionally sensitive person, especially in the workplace. Mm. And according to your assessment here, I am doing the wrong thing. So I'm looking to you for guidance.
Okay. Well, do you know what the right thing is?
I need to be involved with people more. Yeah. I've got the talents of connection, compassion, communication, passions of advocating, protecting, and advising. I want influence. I want something bigger than what I'm doing.
Yeah.
But I accepted this for more pay and management experience. But unfortunately, working for my father is causing more internally in my mind than I thought it
would. Is he aware of this tension as well?
Not as much as I should be telling him, just to keep the business going. I really have kind of kept my mouth shut.
How long have you been working for?
6 months.
All right, finish that statement. I just know. I cut you off accidentally.
I just know that what he's going to say, just knowing him for so long.
What's he going to say?
He's going to tell me that this is a cutthroat industry and that this is what I signed up for, and that the only reason he gives me pushback is when I give pushback. But I give pushback because I'm a manager, and I want things to flow differently. And it reminds me of when he used to help me with my math homework. We just don't connect on a work level. We don't connect in this way.
Ooh.
And I feel that he's not very emotionally intelligent in this arena, and it's almost like a waste of breath if I were to come to him with this.
Yeah.
But I haven't talked to my dad.
I don't want you to.
Months.
Oh, gosh. Okay. So I don't want you to bring up all the things that he needs to do and all these things. And then I'll tell you why. I thought you just did a wonderful job of laying out for yourself. You did it for me, but you really did a wonderful job of laying out for yourself why you got to leave and why this is a no-brainer.
Oh, for sure.
You haven't talked to your dad in 6 months?
Well, I mean, I've worked for him for 6 months, but he hasn't asked me.
I know.
He doesn't know anything.
I know. And by the way,
that's what's upsetting.
I know. And listen, let me tell you the signature moment for me when I knew that you have to leave, and I'm hoping in asking you these questions and letting you hear yourself that this becomes a no-brainer for you emotionally. Because I think the only reason you're even hanging on right now is because of the emotional fallout.
It's the guilt. He created this role for me. I feel like he would just throw his hands up in the air and be like, well, what the heck, man?
Well, guess what? Guess what? I would rather your dad throw his hands in the air and say, what the heck, than this thing deteriorate beyond where it already is.
I agree.
You resent your dad right now. And listen, the signature moment in this whole thing for me was the way he's treating you at work is taking you back to the way he treated you with algebra homework. I'm telling you, everybody in the control booth looked at me and cringed.
Right.
That's not on you.
Yeah.
It's on him. And here's the deal. He's probably not going to change.
Right.
And you know what else is not going to change?
What else?
You're not going to stop being his daughter. He's not going to stop being your dad. So, I've dealt with a lot of this in my own life. Okay? I've dealt with this with a lot of my friends talking through this stuff. There comes a point in time with our parents, when we're adults and they're adults, there comes a point in time where you have to choose which change matters most. Is it that they change? Or is it that you change the circumstances and the boundaries?
Right.
I'm going to whistle for that, folks, because somebody needs to rewind that, as I just dropped some gold on a lot of people, including you, Kay. You have to choose. Am I going to push for my dad to change, or am I going to just say, I need to make changes?
I definitely need to make changes.
You better freaking believe it. And here's what I believe. There will be fallout for this. But the fallout is way less than you staying another 6 months, another year, another 2 years, and something blowing up in the meantime. The bottom line is he's walking around like, doo, 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 doo. He has no freaking clue how bad this is.
That's partly my fault for not speaking up, but I understand.
No, I didn't say it for that reason. And I appreciate your vulnerability and transparency. I didn't say it to call you out. I'm saying he has no idea and it's killing you. And you're going to explode. And then he's going to be like, it's going to be way worse than what the heck, man?
Right.
So I think what we do is we say we minimize this deal. We don't unpack it for him. It's too late. And I think you just go, Dad, I'm really sorry to disappoint you. And I don't know how to say this other than I'm grateful and I'm sad. I'm grateful you gave me the opportunity for more pay. I'm sad it hasn't worked out, but I am choosing you. And I am choosing us. I'm choosing you as my dad, not my boss. And I'm choosing us, not the employee-employer relationship. And so, Dad, I know you're disappointed, but I got to move on. This is not right for me. And if it's not right for me, it's not going to be right for us. I literally would stay as close to that script as possible because you make it about you, not him. He's going to be disappointed, but I think it'll pass.
Right.
You know him better than I do. So you add anything in there that you want to add in style points, but I just think you make it about you and you make it about your relationship. And while he's disappointed.
I know the type of work I'm capable of putting out, but I can't do it. It's not conducive in the environment that I'm in. And so I just know what I'm capable of. And I know that I'm not showing him 100% because of how I feel inside, you know? And so a change has to be made.
Yeah, but again, make the change about you, that you made a poor decision in this and coming in to do this, and it's just not for you. And there's something better for me, which means it's better for us in the company. Dad, I'm so sorry. I don't want to disappoint you, Dad. Dad, I don't want to let you down, but this just isn't right. And because this is your company, because you are my boss, I don't want it to not be excellent.
Right.
I would just focus on the future, you know, because here's the deal. He's going to forgive you quicker than he would somebody else saying that.
Right.
Somebody else saying it. Somebody else saying it's a flake. I mean, I'm hoping for that.
Right.
I think if you go to him with all this underbelly stuff and we just don't click and all this kind of stuff, I think there's a better chance for that conversation down the road.
Right. I don't want it to escalate at all.
I know you don't. I can hear you. You're exhausted.
Yes.
Yeah, I don't want you to be exhausted. I want you to be exhilarated. And me I would too. Just take the high road and make it about you, not about him. And again, I want to remind you something. I've said many times on this program, for me, when it comes to family and these kind of situations, I would rather make the decision that is right for me in my life and disappoint someone as opposed to not make the right decision for me in my life and resent them. Is that the choice that you would rather have?
Right. I resonate with that. I don't want this resentment in me anymore. It's very uncomfortable.
Good. Well, then let it go. I would sing the song from the famous movie, but it's not in my range. And that would ruin
take
this.
Take it down an octave.
That would ruin this moment. Yeah, yeah. Let it go. Let it go. Can't hold me back anymore. There it is. That's all I got for you. Hey, Kay, you got this. You know exactly what to do. Now go do it. Hey, for the rest of you, remember this. You matter. You have what it takes. Press on.
Thanks for listening to The Ken Coleman Show. For more, you can find the show on demand wherever you listen to podcasts and watch the show on YouTube. You can also find Ken across all social media by following @KenColeman.